This is the Senate Committee on Judiciary meeting May 28, 1987 at 3 p.m. in hearing room 343. Today we're having a public hearing on House Bill 2297, 2949A engrossed, House Joint Resolution 26, and Senate Bill 984. We're having a work session on Senate Bill 356, Senate Bill 909, House Bill 2090A engrossed, House Bill 2336A engrossed, House Bill 3092A engrossed, House Bill 2333B engrossed, House Bill 2604, Senate Bill 887, and House Bill 2186.
Oh, that's Marks.
Yeah, that can be.
Okay. Well, let's just go from the top. House Bill 2297. Anybody whose name's not on the sign-up list can't testify. I know who all three of you are, and you didn't sign up.
Didn't see the sign-up slips. They must have given it.
You must have signed up on a different sheet than I've got. I've got, all right. Well, we'll make an exception this time. 2297, all right, Mr. Rawls, are you first?
I'll take the lead, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Lester Rawls. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Professional Liability Fund. I'm here today on House Bill 2297. The bill has been passed by the House and is before you with, as I understand, some very minor amendments, which we have no objection to. If you would like a very quick history of the reason for this bill, is that when the Uniform Commercial Code was passed some 26 years ago, the security agreements and things of that time were 5 years or less were very commonplace. We've progressed past that, where security agreements are going beyond that time, and it now requires those persons who have filed a UCC form to renew that after a five-year period. It came to our attention that many people, not only lawyers who were representing people 5 years ago, were not being aware that they were not being renewed, but we find also, as was testimony given in the House, that many members of the public who handled them themselves without the advice of counsel were finding that later on they went into bankruptcy court because the property people had gone bankrupt, that their UCC filings were not effective, and they lost their security agreement. So this is a bill that really, all it merely does is gives that person who wants a security agreement, if it's the terms of the contract are over 5 years, they have the opportunity to have a 10-year period and don't have to worry about losing their security agreement if they don't get it renewed. The understand the banking people are concerned about having it checked on the form as to whether it be a 5 year or 10 year, and I certainly see no problem in that whatsoever. I'm not certain whether or not you have those amendments before you at the time.
Yes, we do.
You need to make a further change.
Yeah. I can't read it, but it's here. On the hand engrossed.
And Diana Godwin has a couple extra words that she'd like to testify as to a further amendment on the bill.
But I might defer first to Mr. Bronner because my comments are merely technical, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Mr. Chairperson, members of the committee, I'm Frank Bronner with the Oregon Bankers Association. As the bill passed the House, Mr. Chairperson, members of the committee, it would require, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it would have required, in our opinion, two forms. One for the 10-year filing and one for the 5-year filing. The form is prescribed in the statute, And we were also concerned that perhaps the 10-year language could be deleted on a filing found later to void that filing. We think a very simplistic approach to this is to provide one form with the box 5 years and the box 10 years, still requiring the additional filing fee for the 10-year filing. And I believe Ms. Godwin will suggest that one of the boxes must be checked to validate the filing, and we have no problem with that. We just think it will reduce the two forms to one form, and everyone will have that supply.
What about, okay, Diana?
For the record, Mr. Chairman, I'm Diana Godwin, representing the Oregon State Bar, and here today working with the Professional Liability Fund of the Oregon State Bar. The amendments that you have, proposed amendments to May 6, 1987, amendments of House Bill 2297 by the Oregon Bankers Association, I would add a further phrase on that third amendment that says on page 1, line 11, delete, quote, is effective for a period of 10 years, close quote, and insert should be, quote, years or for 10 years, and one of those boxes has been checked, close quote. I will have that handwritten out, and I will hand that to council today. That will clarify that one of the boxes must be checked in order to make the financing statement effective, which only makes sense.
That's fine. Okay, what about, is there some of the language besides boxes or lines that we can be used? How about just a place to be marked? That's kind of an odd phrase to put in the statute, it seems to me. Well, okay, if you work on that, then...
I think the general philosophy is that they should be indicated on there, so that I certainly agree that it be effective one way or the other, and I think the wording can be, shall be so indicated on the form as one place or the other.
We'll work with council, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, if you could, Frank Bronner, if you could look at page 2 of the House amendments, you'll see that the form is there. The form substantially as follows is sufficient to comply. And maybe you have a line or however it's appropriate to put in the statute. But the form is statutorily provided. That was our concern.
This committee may take that form out, you know, if we put it around this bill. All right. Any questions of the witnesses? I think we all understand what you want, and I guess we can work it out how to do it. If you'll work on the language there, either we'll put it in the form, as you indicate, or either way is okay, I think. Just give it to council when you got it agreed on, will you?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Schoon. Wait a minute. Now, hold it. John, I'm sorry here. I overlooked Mr. Saulfield. I'm sorry, Mr. Saulfield. Come on up here on House Bill 2297.
Thank you. I'm a member of the Oregon State Bar Debtor-Creditor Committee, and I just wanted to say that our committee has reviewed the bill, and we support it.
I appreciate your saying that, Mr. Saulfield. Thank you. Now, did I miss anybody else on 2297? All right, we'll close the public hearing on 2297, and we'll go to a public hearing on, are you, John, you're here on two things, aren't you? Okay. Well, let's take, and Sid, you're here on 2949 only. All right, let's take House Bill 2949.
I don't know what his position is, but I trust him. Do you mind representing his name?
No,
okay.
Sure. I trust him too. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For your record, I'm State Representative John Schoon, House District 34. And House Bill 2949 proposes to commence a system of dispute resolutions in our state, which should benefit the entire state and all persons concerned. And I think I'll ask Mr. Lezak, who has a great deal more knowledge in this matter than I do, to describe what it does very briefly. And he promised he would speak not more than 25 minutes, I think, explain why it's good for us.
Senator Brockman, Sid Lezak, I'm chair of the Dispute Resolution Committee of the Oregon State Bar. although I do not speak for that committee. I've also taught the courses in dispute resolution at Willamette Law School and at Lewis and Clark Law School as an adjunct professor, and I was privileged to have Eric Lindauer as one of our guest lecturers, and he's had some practical experience in this matter. Senator Brockman mentioned to me that this had passed the House 58-0, and so I don't intend to spend a great deal of time unless there are questions. And I recognize that Senator Hamby is here, who has been approaching some of the same purposes that we hope to achieve with this bill in another way, and I highly approve of her efforts. Essentially, what this would do would enable what we hope will be a knowledgeable group of persons to investigate what kinds of alternative dispute resolution methods that are now being promoted in the rest of the country would be most appropriate for consideration and establishment here in Oregon. It is not a bill which would use funds other than services of the Legislative Council, and we think that we can. We think that Oregon, as a relatively progressive state, should begin to move in the directions of trying to solve problems in both the criminal and civil justice areas, which provide for resolution of disputes in more effective and less costly ways than provided by the mechanisms which we presently have available, which are only litigation. That doesn't mean that we will displace the courts, far from it, but courts themselves are taking the lead in recognizing that many things are in the courts which can best be handled through alternative dispute resolution methods. I think, other than that, I'm certainly prepared to answer any questions about specifics that are being tried elsewhere and other legislation. But under the circumstances, I think I'll defer to Mr. Lindauer.
Senator Frye, members of the committee, join with Representative Schoon and Mr. Lezak in support of House Bill 2949. I speak when I saw that this was before you as an attorney and one who has shifted his practice, if you will, from litigation to other forms of resolution. I've served on the committee at Willamette University. As you know, Willamette University has been a university that has directed its attention to dispute resolution and has established a Center for Dispute Resolution. Mr. Lezak has been a very effective adjunct professor at that institution in that course, as I have as well. And I think that this House bill and the establishment of the council raises on a state level the consciousness of the community to recognizing the alternatives to a dispute resolution other than litigation. It does provide for the establishment of the council and is set forth in the first section, the use of alternatives that have been recognized that we're working on not only on a county basis as an adjunct to litigation, which has proved effective, but also to look at the other forms of dispute resolution within communities. Willamette University and their Center for Dispute Resolution has taken the lead in that and is one of the few universities in the country that are focused on the dispute resolution as a part of the law school training. So we certainly, speaking as an individual and as one who is interested in the dispute resolution process. I have served as an arbitrator the last 15 years and certainly can see the desirability for the resolution of disputes on that basis and through the mediation basis as well as negotiation and conciliation that have been utilized. I think we're seeing a real change in our country that recognizes that this is the constructive alternative to litigation, and certainly this session of the legislature has seen its share of concerns raised regarding tort reform. We would hope that this is a beginning, at least from the state standpoint, to address this in a very positive and a very constructive way. And I would certainly urge that you recommend passage of this in the Senate, as did the House. I, too, would be glad to answer any questions.
Super bill.
Any questions? I have a question on subsection 5 of section 1, which appears at the top of page 2. Let me hear from someone about what you had in mind on that.
Section 5.
Section 1, subsection 5, lines 1 and 2 on page 2. I'm looking at the engrossed House bill. Page 2, lines 1 and 2 of the engrossed bill.
Is this a redrafting?
Are we not in sync on this? John, have you got that one or not?
Well, I've got the engrossed copy in front of me that I'm looking at. Well, these are under the findings and the objectives, really, of the legislation, and so I'll do the best I can in trying to respond to this, that this would encourage, and there's no mandate at this point, of course, but it would encourage then that in redrafting or updating any official forms that the courts use, that they should consider inclusion of information, that there would be options for alternative dispute resolution if and when they exist.
Right. Okay. But I'm trying to visualize what pleading form is used in the trial court you're speaking of, upon which there will be included certain information about optional dispute resolution forms.
Senator Frey, might I address that? I think in the context that is used, rather than a notice, that there would be some filing with the court indicating that the parties have explored possibility of looking at other manners in which to dispute. I don't think that there would be anything on the form itself, other than that there would be some form of pleading acknowledging to the court that the parties have explored other forms of dispute resolution prior to the filing of the lawsuit.
It's my impression, for example, that some small claims court on the forms, there is information about neighborhood dispute resolution centers and where you may go before coming into court with your claim, and also in domestic relations cases, there are now procedures set up in some courts. Well, even in our state courts, as you know, we have a requirement before you can bring a child custody case into court that you go through mediation. Now, my assumption is that they're merely talking about placing in the forms preparatory to filing such a claim notice of requirements or options to go to other forum before coming into court. But I don't have those are the only specific instances that I know of where that might be applicable.
Any other questions? I'm still not sure. I know exactly what the purpose is, but I guess it's not a mandate anyway.
My understanding is that this was taken verbatim from the New York state law.
That's where the problem.
Where they have a rather well developed system of referrals to other agencies prior to coming into court, and I assume that this has to do with their procedures.
It sounds like it's a consideration rather than not a mandate of the of this bill.
Right.
That in the updating of any official forms that they would consider the inclusion of this option.
All right. Any other questions on this? Thank you. Yes,
Mr. Chairman, just add one thing that Sid Lezak reminded me of, and I apologize for not having more copies of this, but I'll give the chairman a letter from Chief Justice Peterson, who specifically mentions this bill and indicates that he supports this concept.
All right. Fine. Thank you. I think I'll have this staff copy this, and we'll put it in our file. Okay? All right. Thanks very much, gentlemen.
Right, thank you.
You can stay right there, Representative Schoon, because we're going to go right next to HJR 26. Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, HJR 26 is a resolution that recognizes the efforts of one of your former members, Governor Attia, and his contribution to the, and steadfast support of law enforcement efforts in the state, and it particularly recognizes his efforts during the last session to establish a permanent site for the police academy. You may recall that we passed a bill in the last session that established a permanent site for the police academy and also caused something to happen that we've been trying to do for many, many years, maybe as long as Governor T has been in the legislature, and that was to get the state police to join with the Board of Police Standards and Training to combine their training to save us money and do a better job all the way around. The original draft would have named the academy itself for Governor Attia, former Governor Attia, and I got a little head too far on that one, and the board said, well, what we'd really like to do is name the boardroom for him, and we're thinking about having a award for each class, a professionalism award for an officer selected from each class, and I said, great. And so we all agreed on that, and while this resolution then might not appear to be necessary, it does make sure that they proceed with their intentions, and at the same time, it truly honors, again, your former member, Senator, and subsequent Governor Attia, for his efforts in getting this done.
Any questions, Representative Schoon? Senator Wires.
I'd rather pass a resolution honoring you and your work in the legislature.
You want to make an amendment?
I'll respectfully decline, thank you.
I usually vote for resolutions, and I generally have tried to avoid spending a lot of time criticizing the former governor, but I have a little hang-up about this in two ways. One is expense, this even small amount of expense in pushing this through the process, and also I'm sorry to say, I don't think he showed a lot of leadership in this area. But maybe having said that, I can get myself to be quiet from now on. But he tried very hard to commute Dwayne Samples' sentence and didn't actively participate, really, in the management of the department as far as the overcrowding of the penitentiary and a number of other problems. I guess this is the time to memorialize people and to keep your mouth shut about stuff like that. But
Mr. Chairman and Senator Wires, I know that some of us had problems from time to time, including me, about the amount of money that he spent on law enforcement agencies when there were other things that he could have perhaps used them for that were a little higher priority to us. But
maybe having said all that, I've got it off my chest now. I keep my mouth shut because this isn't going to hurt anybody. And I appreciate your doing this. Thank you.
I suppose this may sound a little bit odd, but has Governor Attia given his personal approval for this?
Yes, he did.
Because, you know, a lot of people are sensitive about having things named after them during their lifetime. I don't think I'd like that myself, but I just wondered.
Yes, he did. And that was really one of the, I guess, my biggest concern was that something might happen that would somehow embarrass him. And so I did make sure that he did concur with this before we undertook it.
Okay, John, thanks for being here then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have anything else today? Do you have anything else here with us today?
No, sir. Thank you.
Okay, you're excused then. Unless you want to sit around and watch us.
No, thanks.
One more witness on this one. Oh, yes, that's right. Mr. Slice from Salem is here.
Chairman Fry, members of the committee, John Chess of AFACT in Salem. I'd like to start by reading a quote by a famous FBI agent talking about an organization. He says, I say the color is dirty red. It's not even clean red. In some areas, you'll find that the policy of Civil Liberties Union is to go right straight down the Communist Party line all the way. Now, this is not a statement of opinion. It is a statement of fact. And if anyone wants to question that fact, I will challenge him to prove otherwise at any time. The reason I mention this is this organization sponsored a bill in the last session. They were the sole sponsor. to remove a certain law from our books, which is kind of strange. It says to remove this section: no textbook shall be used in the schools which speak slightingly of the founders of the Republic or of those who preserve the Union or which belittles or undervalues their work. The question I ask is, why did this law have to be removed? Well, I read a book by William Foster, who helped found this organization. He was head of the Communist Party. And he called for removal of patriotic and religious themes from the classroom. And they're, one of the goals of the party, of course, is always to bring our forefathers under attack so that they, so that their basic plan of government could be discredited. And this probably doesn't sound like it relates, but it relates to the issue here at hand, because I documented this to the governor, and he still signed it in our faces. Now, I can see a lot of representatives maybe getting fooled by this organization, but when the governor has full documentation in his hands and signs it, I begin to question whether that's an act of treason or not. But the real reason I'm against this bill, besides that, is I think that if you're going to name a police academy, it should be named after those who are really out there risking their lives. I don't think politicians should take credit for that. I think that we ought to search for a patrolman or a policeman that has a sound service record, well decorated, that could, I think, would bring much more honor to the name of this academy than a politician who has not served in that capacity.
All right.
This time I agree with Senator Wyers.
Any questions?
Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, we'll close the hearing on House Joint Resolution 26. And we'll go to... Let's take...
The last thing he said was...
I don't know.
The last thing he said was, this time I agree with Senator.
I think we'll take the Senate. Pardon, Senator?
984 will not take too long.
I would go to that. Yeah, there's my other lawyer up there. You have someone here on that, Senator Hanvey? Or?
I have one witness in case there are technical questions. Otherwise.
Okay, fine. Well, let's do that then. We'll take Senate Bill 984. We have all right, so I have April Lackey. Is that who you had in mind?
Oh, Steve Sano is the one.
All right, that's who we'll call. Steve Sano?
Yes.
All right, Steve Sano, please. We have three witnesses signed up on Senate Bill 984. Before you start now, Mr. Sano, Senator Dukes, are you here on House Bill 2604?
Oh, forgive me. I'm sorry.
And did Representative Hanlon expect to be here also?
No, Mr. Chairman, he has to be in the floor of the House right now. He sent his apologies, but I am prepared to speak for both of us.
Well, I don't know whether the governor's office is going to be here or not.
Here.
Oh, yes, all right.
We're all here. We're
Everybody's here. Okay, I think then I didn't want to start on that without Representative Hanlon being here, but if he's not going to, he doesn't care, then we'll take that next. So
that's
just be patient.
Sir,
I didn't want you to be spending your time here in this committee room waiting. All right, sir, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Steve Sano. I'm the Assistant Director of the Mental Health Department in Washington County. Among other things, I supervise our sexual offender treatment program, and under Senate Bill 284 of the 1983 session, a portion of that treatment program involves the use of a drug called Depo-Provera. I wanted to speak in favor of Senate Bill 984 because it, first of all, will allow the courts to order men who have been convicted or plead guilty of sexual offenses to have an evaluation done to see if they could benefit from this kind of a medical treatment. It also outlines that the court would appoint the physician or the psychiatrist that would be doing the examination, and only persons who were diagnosed as having a paraphilia would be eligible for treatment under this bill. Now, to give you an example, a paraphilia is kind of a technical term, but really what it means is a man whose primary sexual orientation is something other than adult male or adult female. For example, a child molester would be called a pedophile. That's one of the paraphilias. And I guess the reason I'm primarily in favor of this is that men who have these kind of problems are going to continue to act out compulsively on their deviant sexual orientation until they get some kind of treatment. And that, frankly, was part of the intent of Senate Bill 284 that was passed in the 1983 session. Depo-Provera is a drug that will effectively assist a man who wants to be helped. It assists them by controlling their sexual fantasy and also makes them sexually apathetic. It does not make a man impotent, but it makes a man sexually apathetic. This then makes an offender more available for other kinds of treatment. And I'd like to emphasize that this drug on its own is not an effective treatment for sexual deviation, but certainly makes a man more available for other forms of treatment. So for those reasons, I think that Senate Bill 984 is a good bill, and I'd urge the committee to pass it.
I'd like to ask Senator Hamby, can you bring us up to date now? How is this different from the 1983 legislation? Whatever did happen to the 83 legislation?
Right. If you'll
tend to want to support any kind of an agreement you've come to, but I'm a little concerned. If you only delete these sex related things, that leaves other things that are crimes where somebody intentionally has inflicted serious bodily harm to someone, and although this person hadn't, so you didn't have a prediction of that by their conduct, you wouldn't have protected the people in the community by filtering him out through that method or this method you're talking about. But if you just take sex crimes, sex abuse in the first degree is a Class C felony and would fit under that definition, I think, unless you're just going to delete the ones you got on here. Is that what you're going to do, is just delete the ones you got on here?
No, sir. Mr. Chairman, Senator Wires, there will be new language which includes all felony
Felony sex crimes.
Yes, sir.
Well, one of the things that I've learned about in my law practice is that if a grandparent caresses a grandchild in the genital area fully clothed, that's a Class C felony. And the criminal records in both Washington and Multnomah County would show that that's the fact. And there have been people convicted of that in the last couple of years. And it would seem to me I'd have a little logical consistency problem with saying that somebody who'd done that couldn't be trusted out in to plant trees when somebody that had committed kidnapping could, for example.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wires, that individual would be eligible for minimum placement other than the forestry camp, and it may not be that that conviction resulted in commitment to the department.
I would comment, if I could, Senator Wires. Generally speaking, and my grandparents get younger every day, but generally speaking, we don't get too many grandparents out at the forest camp. The age category of people who are out planting trees in the woods is usually much younger. And that and clearing fire roads and serving on fire patrol, pretty exclusive of what they do.
Well, let me just ask it this way. What do you see as the advantage of excluding sex crimes and not excluding assault crimes?
Senator, when we started, I was happy excluding all of these folks. That is not a realistic thing to do, considering the needs of the Corrections Division today. My community is facing the reality that, the sudden realization that they can come home from work with teenage daughters who are come home from school and are there in the house alone, to discover that the people literally in their front yards have been convicted of sex crimes. This was not the arrangement under which they accepted that camp and those people in their area. And they are simply unable to accept that.
Well, the biggest, although it didn't work in this case that way, one of the biggest predictors of who's going to commit a violent physical crime against somebody is whether they've done it before. And a lot of people who commit sex crimes do not combine that with violence. If you have sex with somebody who's under 12, I believe it is, and it's consensual, no matter how heinous it is, it's Class A felony and does not involve kidnap or taking some object in some way seriously harming somebody. And so I just kind of feel like if I lived in that area, I would want the people filtered out that had ever kidnapped somebody or commit or caused somebody serious bodily harm, and I would rather have that over somebody who had engaged in a nonviolent felony sex situation. That's just sort of my sort of who I would want to try and keep out of a house down the block from me that was going to be a halfway house. But I'm willing to cooperate with anything the people from that area want.
Yes, Senator Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess Mr. Frankie raises the whole issue here of maybe the ability of the correction system to identify people that are dangerous. Mm-hmm. And I'm having a little trouble with thinking now about truly dangerous people being in these camps anyway. Now, where the overcrowding problem? And I guess I need to know how would these people, truly dangerous people, be in these camps that are making this agreement difficult? And I know that it sounds like maybe we're going through everything that you've already gone through, but I just need to have some comfort about that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hill, the risk issue is a difficult one to understand because there's some seeming contradictions in it. The evidence indicates, statistical research indicates, that the highest risk for escape, the highest risk for violent behavior is among young white property offenders. There are people who have low regard for rules and low regard for authority, and there are people who act out quickly. Statistics indicate that one of the lowest risks for violence or escape is sexual offenders. However, statistics also indicate that those people are the most difficult group of criminals to have an impact on with regard to recidivism. In other words, rehabilitation concept seems to fail with sex offenders more than it does with other types of offenders. When you couple that factor together with the community's concerns and a commitment that I've been able to verify by talking to previous department administrators to exclude sex offenders from Tillamook, I think that's the basis of what this amendment is trying to get to.
Okay, so then the people that the violent, the property offenders that you talked about, they are liable to be put there then, the most violent. And you're going to leave the sex offenders out. I mean, I guess, see, I don't understand why there's even a problem, I guess.
Okay.
I mean,
I can comment on that.
Okay, Senator.
I think I can comment on that.
Yes.
Well, maybe this isn't exactly responsive to your concern, but this isn't exactly the product of complete logic. This is this is the product of what we, the sponsors of the legislation, particularly Representative Hanlon and Senator Dukes as an interested representative of that neck of the woods, what they were able to convince the governor's office that they could do that would be acceptable to him, and it's kind of where, that's where we are.
Okay, all right. Just a, well, let's take any more time with it, yeah, then,
that's,
Mr. Chairman.
That's where we are.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, you,
yes, Senator,
identified it very well. Representative Hanlon and I have agreed not to come in and ask for the amendments that were sent to you by the House.
Right. Okay. Well, then the chair would move the amendment in concept anyway. It's been presented to us by Senator Dukes, and the council can put that together and come back to us with it, and my amendment passes, that'll take care of it. So that's my amendment. Any objection to that? All right. I think that I would move the bill as amended with the proviso that the council provide to us the precise language that's going to accomplish this conceptual motion. I don't think it's all that complicated, but I want the committee members at least to feel comfortable with the end product. Is that all right with the committee? All right, we'll call a roll on my motion and send us to the floor as amended, do pass.
Aye.
Aye, I guess.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right, that carries. All right. Thank you for your efforts on this very much, and
thank
the governor's office. I know you spent a lot of time on this matter. Senate Bill 356 is our biennial bill on lien law. And every session is the same way. Everybody starts off poles apart, and then finally everybody gets together and they come up with something that they said is going to cure the problem forever, only they're back again the next session because the problem never gets cured. So go ahead.
Chairman Fry, I'm Representative Paul Phillips, representing House District 9, which is Tigard in Washington County. Your synopsis of the lien law was absolutely 100% accurate. I am here today to encourage you to pass out the third draft of SB 356. We have dealt with a number of House bills, and I chair the lien committee for the House Judiciary. How I'm blessed with that responsibility, I don't know what the Lord ever did to me, but we're ready to receive that bill over. I have read the summary and talked to the agreement with the bankers and the AGC and the rental companies and home builders and any other group that you can possibly think of. I think the issue of the completion notice is really critical this session. We do have to deal with it. And, you know, I'll let the experts go into the specifics, but I'd encourage action on the bill today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
We have one previous hearing on this bill.
We have what?
One previous hearing on this bill.
Oh, I should say we did.
Yes, we did.
Yes, we should have certainly did. All right, who's next down there?
Go ahead. Mr. Chair, Mike Scott. I'm an attorney from Tigard and represent the Construction Industry Committee. I, too, would encourage that Draft 3 come out today. Before the committee is a measure summary, which we understand, for the most part, reflects the intention of what we would like the legislation to do. Whether Draft 3 accomplishes that, I'm not sure. I have not seen it for that long. This is a very complicated area of the law. There may need to be some T's crossed and some I's dotted. I understand from Representative Phillips' comments that the House is willing to let us do some of that to make sure that the legislation does, in fact, reflect the intention of the parties as set forth on the measure summary. We would appreciate the opportunity to make those corrections if need be on the House side. As we understand, perhaps the Senate has dealt with this problem long enough, and we are reaching, I believe, an agreement between the parties.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Frank Bronner with the Oregon Bankers Association. As we began the session with our biennial effort, there were two very important considerations from our point of view. One was the completion notice, and that is handled in the Dash 3 amendments. The second was somehow to reduce from 90 days, we propose 60 days, the time period. We have agreed to the 75 days that you'll see in the Dash 3. I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
The other substantive change that's in the bill would have to do with providing a civil cause of action if liens are not released upon a written demand, and would allow for the post-petition filing of construction liens with an understanding that that would not affect any pending litigation concerning that issue.
Now, is the Dash 3 amendment, is that the product that everyone's agreed on?
That's right, Mr. Chair. Dash 3.
Cross your hearts.
It's the work in progress that we're agreeing on.
Mr. Chairman, you have my total support for Dash 3. That is what we agreed on. It is correct that we've just seen the Dash 3 as it comes from Legislative Council. There may be some eyes, and we're willing to discuss those. There are other players that attended all of our meetings. The home builders are involved in this, and Mr. Kalinowski's involved. But we did have agreement as we presented them to your committee yesterday afternoon.
All right. Jack Kalinowski, did you want to say anything on the record or not? You're in agreement with this on behalf of the associated the general contractors. And do we have any other persons back here representing any other groups that want to go on the record in the support of this?
The title companies are here.
Title companies are agreed.
Oh, dispute resolution. My heaven.
Well, how about that?
It hasn't been easy, Senator Hamby.
Representative Phillips, you've been right in the middle of this thing, trying to get some of these kinks ironed out, haven't you?
Almost too much in the middle of it, that's for sure.
Appreciate your efforts here, and I assume when it gets over there to your side that you won't have to go through all these contortions that we've been through, hopefully.
Certainly is my hope.
Hopefully. All right.
Thank you.
Chair will move the Dash 3 amendments then. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair will move Senate Bill 356 as so amended to the floor due pass. Discussion. Call the roll, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. That carries. Now we've got a court. Are you here on both 3092 and 2333?
Yes, I am.
Well, let's take 3092, House Bill 30292. Is my counsel around? Yes, here he is. Go ahead, folks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is, as the committee is aware, the prison siting bill.
This is in your name again.
Beg your pardon. Corey Streisinger, legal counsel to Governor Goldschmidt.
Okay.
This bill is one of the major portions of the governor's corrections package. When we were here for a public hearing last time, we discussed a couple of minor amendments on the Dash 14 amendments, and since that time, well, at that hearing, a couple of other minor matters were discussed. Council pointed out a discrepancy in the requirements for the siting authority and the site nominating committee involved in the site selection process to in the criteria that those bodies were to consider. We have proposed additional amendments, which are, I believe, the Dash 15 amendments, which clear up that discrepancy. I don't know if the chair wants me to review the major points of the bill itself or just take questions on the amendments.
Well, I think we've gone over the bill itself pretty thoroughly, unless the committee members have questions on the bill itself. Now, you say it's the Dash 14 amendments?
The Dash 15 are the new amendments that the committee hasn't seen yet.
Oh, we haven't seen them yet.
Not till today.
I'm still looking for mine.
It should be in your file.
Are they in? I don't think so, Mark.
I don't have mine. Has anybody got that?
So all I have is a request from Lake Oregon Cities.
The last one is Dash 14.
We don't have the amendments that you people are talking to us about. That's the problem.
Dash 15.
They're supposed to be copied. I can go and Xerox them, or they're very minor. I can go through them with the committee directing you to the page and line number.
Okay. We'll start that way, and then the page comes in, maybe we can have a copy made.
If the committee can first turn to page 2, line 26. The discrepancy that this amendment deals with is the criteria issue. There's different levels of review here. We wanted to make sure that everyone was using the same criteria. So on page 2, line 26, this is the governor's task force that's going to do the preparatory work for the governor on the certificate of emergency need, and they're going to recommend to the governor this list of mandatory and desirable criteria. So that's already in page 2, line 26. Now, if you'll turn to page 3, line 41, this is another stage of the review. After the governor issues the certificate of emergency need...
If I might interject, Mr. Kramer, you've skipped one step, and that is that the certificate of emergency need issued by the governor itself then incorporates criteria applicable to that specific facility.
Right. Now, on page 3, line 41, this is the step after the governor issues the certificate, the corrections division establishes a site nomination committee. On line 41, the current language says nominate three sites based on the following criteria. The amendment would be on line 41 after the word on. It would read the criteria set out in the certificate of emergency need and the following criteria. So that requires the nomination committee to follow the previously established criteria and, in addition, the criteria set forth beginning on line 42. That's the First Amendment.
But there's no... What precisely... Is there a change in language there?
After the word on...
Yes.
On line 41, the words would say the criteria set out in the certificate of emergency need and.
And on the following.
Correct. Incorporate then both sets of criteria.
All right.
Then on page 44.
Let's stop just a moment.
I mean, page.
Let me stop just a moment. That would be the first language change in the bill.
Correct.
All right, go ahead.
Now, on page 4, line 44, this is another step in the process. This is after the certificate's issued, after the nomination by the corrections division. Now we're into the corrections facility siting authority and their actual site selection. So on page 4, line 44, after the word certificate, insert and in paragraph A of subsection 4 of this section. So that would then require the last authority in the process to consider the two previous sets of criteria. Set A from the task force, set B from the division's nominating committee. So now they've got three sets. They've got to examine everything that was heard before. Then there's one other minor amendment. On page 4, that same page, line 9, delete the word findings and insert the word conclusions. And that's an effort to prevent any confusion between the findings that the corrections facility siting authority has to make and the nomination committee. The authority will make the findings. We just didn't want to confuse the two different entities. One will make findings and one will make something else that we're calling conclusions. And those are the dash 15 amendments.
Any questions of counsel or the witnesses regarding the dash 19 amendments?
I wonder if they think we ought to
put the same amendments in here about sex offenders. No, I don't think they want to.
It's your chance.
All right. Well, the chair will move the dash 19 amendments.
Chair, dash 15.
I'm sorry, dash 15 amendments that we just heard discussed, and that those involve language changes in three places. Page 3 on line 41, page 4 on lines 9 and 44, as just stated by counsel, and I assume anybody want the, I assume that those amendments are somewhere.
They're in front of me.
LC, right, in front of him. Mm-hmm.
This was just a glitch for some reason that didn't make it from our office to the members' files.
Well, do the committee members want to see the actual? All right. Any objection to those, to that amendment? So ordered. Anything else in this
bill? Mr. Chair, I don't know if we've, if the committee has already approved the dash 14 amendments. If not, the committee may want to deal with that.
Well, where did, after we got the A. and Gross House bill, where did the amendments start then? With dash what?
Dash 14, Mr. Yes. Chair.
Okay, so we do have to adopt dash 14. I don't think we've done that.
I'll move dash 14, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hamby moves the dash 14 amendments.
Chairman?
Senator Brenneman?
In the dash 14, well, Council will probably help me hear more with that. I've got a question the League of Oregon Cities raised on any person adversely affected. You saw that letter, I think, or have it there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Brenneman, their concern is addressed in the dash 14 amendments by allowing the challenging entity not only to be person, but to be local government.
Okay.
Any objection to the motion to adopt the dash 14 amendments? Not so ordered. And Senator Hamby would move House Bill 3092 as amended to the floor. Do pass. Discussion.
Chair, I just
Senator Cohen.
Want to make sure that I'm recorded as no vote.
I'm going to call a roll in a minute, and I'm sure that if you answer that way, you'll be recorded that way.
I didn't want you to sort of assume that we're having any.
Did you want to discuss it or make any comments?
No, I don't think so. I think it's.
It has to do with land use laws, or?
It has to do with land use laws, and it has to do with.
Okay. Okay, call a roll then.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Hill.
Aye.
Wyatt.
Aye. Aye.
Mr. Chair, before you leave this bill, I send a note to committee counsel. This bill initially had a subsequent referral to Senate Agriculture. As I understand it, the chair of that committee and the Senate president are agreeable to removing that subsequent referral. I don't know whether it requires action by this committee.
Yes, that's right. And I don't have that letter. I don't think that letter in the file. I know I've seen it.
I give you another copy of it, Mr. Chair.
Is everyone aware of that?
I did not copy the letter for distribution to the committee.
All right. This is... Well, it's represented that Senator Bradbury doesn't feel that the need for subsequent referral to the Agriculture Committee is necessary, correct?
That's correct. I have spoken to Senator Bradbury about that.
And the President also agrees that subsequent referral is unnecessary?
That's correct.
All right. Then, without objection by the committee members, staff will write a letter from my signature recommending to the President that the subsequent referral be deleted. Any objection to that? All right. We'll do that then. Okay, thank you. Then let's just move right on to House Bill 2333. Who's going to bring us up to date on this now? Has there been something happened since our hearing?
Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, this is the bill that creates the Department of Corrections. And the length of the bill is due to the fact that we've got to deal with thousands of statutes that refer to corrections, as now it's going to be a corrections department. One of the features of the bill, in addition to creating the department, is requiring the corrections department to continue to work with human resources department in dealing with the human services and rehabilitation needs of inmates. And that's particularly provided on page 2, I believe, beginning on lines 22. I also noted another minor change on page 88, that's section 215 of the bill. An additional $5,000 is added to the revolving fund, and the bill also adds two categories of claims which may draw upon the fund. So this fund is replenished each time there's a withdrawal made from it. That's page 88, lines 1 through 17.
Do we have anything at all in terms of proposed Senate amendments?
I don't believe there are any amendments to the bill. There is in the bill the appropriation for the governor's task force, but Ms. Streisinger can correct me if I'm wrong. That's already been approved by Ways and Means Committee.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Kramer, that's correct, and I should point out that this bill did go through Ways and Means on the House side, where that revolving fund issue was discussed, and also the fact that the appropriations have been handled elsewhere.
All right.
I'd move it.
All right. Senator Cohen moves House Bill 2333 to the floor. Do pass. Any discussion? Senator Hamby.
Help me understand, or perhaps counsel can, on page 88, the settlement of legal claims against the department in cases where immediate payment is necessary or advisable.
What page is that, Senator?
Uh-huh.
What page are you
page
on?
Page 88, yeah. Lines 13 and 14.
Mr. Frankie may also seek to add to this, but I